Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. So excited you decided to join us today. Before we jump in and talk about the topic today, I'll get it out. I'm leaving that in. I'd like to give a big shout out to our two sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shoe machine on the market, bar none. They are awesome. They rock. Mention Coach Unplugged. They'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. We have a special, quote unquote, special going on right now where we're giving quarterly memberships. We're super excited about that. People seem excited about it. And then that maybe come in and join for 3 months and take a couple months off. I personally would never leave teachhoops.com, but you have that option. And it's great. So go over and check it out, teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Let's head off to the podcast.
All right. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. Coach Winters and I were talking before we came on. We're going to talk about his book this week. We were talking that you think everyone's got a book in them. I think that's true too.
I do. And I think I was amazed at how easy the process was. You know, for me, it was the pandemic started in November. We had no season. Now I've got all this, I don't know if you call it free time, but time that's usually occupied and we're usually really busy. I really just grabbed an iPad and started doing the speech to text in the iPad and just idea after idea after idea. And, you know, it started off as just, the goal was to write the book. I mean, that's what I wanted to do immediately, but I was amazed that next thing I know, I haven't even started to really write it. I'm just brainstorming. And then when I transferred to a Google Doc, I was at like 30,000 words already in the book.
And what do you teach again?
I teach in the business department. So I teach career development. I teach consumer education. As soon as school was over, the time I'd be going to practice, I'd just grab the iPad. I took it to school with me every day, hung out in the classroom. And I mean, like I said, that's before I even started developing the chapters. Like that was just brainstorming ideas. So the book ended up being a little over 75,000 words, which translates to 270 pages. And, you know, I love helping coaches. You know, I just really enjoy that. I think if, you know, I love answering questions with coaches and just doing coaching, talking at clinics and doing these things with you and others. So it was really kind of easy to start doing. And, you know, my goal was not, you know, do it this way or do it that way. It was just all the Q&A that you kind of go through in your mind over how many years, I don't know how many years you've been doing it. I'm at 25 seasons and just how I got to where I was.
Right.
The book is called The Journey and it wasn't really necessarily you got to get to where I'm at. It's just, you got to figure out how to get to where you want to be. And I think the beauty of this game is you can look at the same group of guys that I can, and you can put together a style and be really good And I could take the same group of guys and play a totally different style and also be really good.
I always use it now, it's like we could both get the same ingredients and make soup, but I might put more onions in and you might put more. It is interesting how that, and you might put more potato, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's what's cool about our game. You know,
it is. I think it's what makes it very unique. I think a lot of coaches were in the same boat as both of us. I got a lot done in the pandemic. I'm going to turn my alarm off. I'm the worst when it comes to turning off my phones and my own podcast. But anyway, I think a lot of coaches are in the same boat as far as, you know, having that time and then filling it. I still can't believe it was that long ago. I mean, I got a lot done, but I always feel like I could have gotten more done.
I think we're all really ambitious when it started, and then it got really easy to start binging shows on Netflix like everybody else. So, you know, right. We all fall in that pattern.
I think so. I agree. I think, I mean, I wrote a very G-rated version of a season. I think it was 2009, and I was writing for the newspaper, and then I eventually turned it into a little book. I know my brother wrote a book. Like I said, I think everybody's got a book in them. It's just a matter of, you know, the only reason I got mine done is I was writing it for our local paper. So it kind of kept me on, because I'm a math teacher. I like writing, but writing is not my thing, to be honest.
I'm the same way. It comes pretty easy to me, but it's not my favorite thing. But
right.
But then all of a sudden you're writing about basketball instead of, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird or something back in high school. It's like, this is kind of cool.
It is true. I mean, yes. I mean, I think I wrote for my master's thesis was like 158 pages. It was crazy. I don't think I've opened it since. It was just horrible. right. From a math teacher, it was. So what was the most difficult part of the process?
You know, I don't know about difficult, but the thing that really struck me is just how emotional I got at so many points right in the book. I really tried to include the entire journey. Like, you've got to be able to handle this emotionally. You've got to be able to carry the weight of a community on your shoulders, but not let them know that you're carrying it, because you got to be that guy that looks calm, cool, collected, confident, you know, throw all those C words in there and have nobody know that you may not believe that your game plan is going to work either. You know, we all go through that as coaches.
Like the duck across the water. They look very calm, but if you look below the water, you'd see their feet just like,
That's exactly right. And so, you know, just preparing really, you know, some of that's for young coaches, just the emotions involved with it. You know, and then I just reflecting on, I think I've lost six players over the years, you know, to a couple of the tragic car accidents, one to a shooting, one to a drug overdose, and just kind of going through like, look, if you're going to do this and you commit to it for a long time, you're going to build these relationships up with, and you're going to lose some people. And it's really hard to describe or understand, you know, when a young person, I'm sure you've been through it, when a young person just is tragically taken from us for one reason or another. So
yeah, I had one of the worst ones, and I was young when this happened. I was coaching girls volleyball, and Sarah Wiegert, I never forget her name. And she was on my sophomore volleyball team, and I had her in class.
So this is
what makes it a little bit more unique, in the sense that I saw her on Friday. She said, "I don't feel very good, Mr. Collins. I'm going home. I just don't feel very good." And I said, "Okay." And, you know, she was asking for her math homework, and I gave it to her. And she's a freshman in high school, and she was dead by Monday or Sunday. She had acute leukemia. So yeah, there's so this type of
pretty far advanced and didn't.
Yeah, it was 24 hours. She was gone in 48 hours, basically. Wow. It was it just shook. And this was all the freshmen in high school in my classroom. And it shook us. It still shakes me. And it's been 27 years. It's like, oh my gosh. It's like,
yeah. In this process, I've talked to a couple of the parents and stuff, and just, hey, let them, give them a heads up. Like, hey, you know, I mentioned your son in the book, and obviously really positive things and great experiences great memories. But, you know, so there's a little bit of all of that. There's the, you know, how I got to where I'm at from a coaching philosophy standpoint, all X's and O's, all that stuff, but, you know, also a lot of culture building and just the, really just, you know, for you and I, what the journey is all about.
So explain how the chapters or how the sections are broken up. Because
I think
the title itself, Lessons from the Hardwood, could literally be the Encyclopedia Britannica. Like, you could go through
right, and it's my version of that. Basically, right. Is what it is from a basketball standpoint. This is just what I've experienced through 25 seasons, and it's, you know, early on in the book, it's really about you know, this is what you're going to have to be prepared for if you want to coach. You know, the highs, the lows, the how important it is to have a family that's behind you. You know, the being able to handle criticism, I guess being thick skinned, I guess would be a good way to describe it, you know, just kind of talking about all those things. Talking about some of the challenges we face today, like social media is a challenge for us today. You know, it's a blessing and a challenge at the same time, I think, for all of us. And then just getting into, there's two sections called Building the High School Program, part one and part two. One is very specific to building your philosophy from an X's and O's standpoint. One is more specific to, you know, how you handle everything within your culture, how you build your culture, everything from the way we use statistics in a game, how we evaluate a post game, you know, a post game meeting, just literally taking you through the entire game day experience, the entire culture building experience. And then for me, I wanted to include some local history. I've been fortunate, as I know you have too. You had some great stories coaching against guys like Sean Livingston, Jalen Brunson. I wrote this in January. You know, John Shire knocked us out of the state tournament in the Final Four back in 2005. And obviously, associate head coach at Duke. And I said in the book, I said, you know, and I wrote this in January, but nobody's going to believe me. I said, I think he's going to be the next head coach at Duke. And then obviously we know in the last couple of months, Coach K's announced his retirement. And they've announced that John Shire is going to be the next head coach. So people are going to read it like, oh, well, you knew that. The book came out after it happened. But,
right,
you know, the writing process started a while back.
So tell me about this. This intrigues me. So tell me, so you're done in January. We're doing this in August.
Yep.
So we're eight. Well, so that it takes that long for editing and all those kind of things.
So I think a few things. First of all, I wasn't quite done in January.
Okay.
Our season started like the last weekend in January. So I kind of put it on hold for about 6 weeks. Our season was, we played 14 games over a 5 week season from start to finish, first game to last game, but we had about a week to prepare. So it was a sprint.
And how was that?
It was strangely weird and gratifying all at the same time. Just getting to see the kids have an opportunity. Cause that, by that point you're thinking you're seniors and you know, I mean, you guys didn't get to play. Your seniors, that's just where your heart's at for your seniors more than anything, you know, all of them, but especially the seniors. And so I was grateful for that. We had a nice season. You know, there was no postseason. We had no regional, sectional, state tournament, anything like that. So our league put together a crossover night the last night. Like we split into two divisions, which we've never done before, and played everybody in our division twice, played everybody on the other side once. And then we had we made it in the Nick 10 championship game. So, but it was weird. You walk into a championship game, they got the conference traveling trophy there and everything. And there's no fans. I mean, we had 25 parents on each side. That was it. So,
right.
You know, but I think at the same time, I think you just take a different perspective. It was just, we were lucky to be there. We're happy to be there. And the kids competed hard, and that's what it's all about. So, so that was tough, but it was something, you know, like I said, you guys didn't get anything. So it's, you know, grateful for that for sure.
Right. Some people got a season like it just was a normal season too. It's weird. Right. The U.S. was in a weird spot. So what would, give me three takeaways from this book that you would, three big takeaways from the book.
I think, you know, just the roller coaster ride, that is what we do.
Okay.
You know, and I think I wanted to make sure that coaches knew that, because I think many of them come in with these ideas and expectations, and then you get slapped in the face by a parent situation or an administrative situation or something. And much like referees, we lose some coaches who never really find out if it is what's right for them.
I know. I think back to when I was like, oh my gosh, when it's 32 seasons for me, but man, when I think back to some of those early ones, it's like I'm glad I fought through it, but it was hard. I was single, so that probably helped.
Well, that helps. Yeah, that definitely helps when you're starting off. And you know, back then when we had to go scout every Friday night, that was a ton of time. And early on in my marriage, we were still scouting a lot. And I think that burden has eased quite a bit because of the fact that we can exchange film and do all those things. So, you know, some coaches will never fully know. You know, what you and I went through as young coaches. We always tell the story, right? It was harder when we were kids.
When there was no huddle, there was no statistical breakdown. There was no, like, I tell the story all the time. It was two VHS tapes. I remember our first apartment.
The dubbing.
Dubbing. I'd go scout. It was just my wife and I, and I'd go into the other room. I think we had a one bedroom. Anyway, I had a spot to do all my editing, and off I'd go for like 2 hours. I mean, we're like newlyweds.
At least
like,
2 hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
2 hours.
And then I had 15 tapes. So then I had to dub those to give to the boy. It was like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
And you know, I wrote some things that I think, I know you've read the book Stuff Good Players Should Know by Dick DiVenzio.
Yep.
Some of it's just like that, like a chapter, maybe a page and a half, but it's just a thought I had to kind of convey to somebody. It didn't really need to be developed a lot. I wrote a page about, I think one of my big lessons in the book is that we enter this profession thinking that our team reunions 10 years down the road are going to be about the buzzer beater, the state championship or whatever, the conference championship and all that stuff. And when I say the kids, when the grownups get there, the kids that you coach get there at that reunion, that's not what they talk about. You know, they talk about the bus rides. They talk about when you flipped out on them as their coach and made them run until so-and-so, you know, had to get over the garbage can and throw up. They, you know, there's just so many of those stories that it's a really strong reminder that everything we use the game for is really more important for their bigger role down the road, being dads, being leaders in our society, whether you're coaching girls, obviously being moms, you know, just that's the more important thing. And, you know, I actually had to, after the book was done, I had a young man get, a former player was killed in a motorcycle accident. And I told the publisher, I said, I want to edit this. I got to put this in there. And it was ironic because the kid had reached out to me. We didn't always see eye to eye. He was one of those kids that didn't play a lot for me. He wanted to play a lot. He was a good athlete. But that team I had was just stacked at Jefferson back in the day. We were 6'6", 6'8", 6'10". And he just didn't get on the floor much. And he was, you know, he was still mad about that several years down the road. A month before his motorcycle accident, he reached out to me. Hadn't talked to me in a long time. And he said, Coach, I just want you to know I get it now. He goes, I appreciate everything. And I said, I understand. I see things a lot more clearly now than I did back when I was in high school, and I appreciate everything you did for me. And I was just like, wow, that's, you know, that's really cool. And you know how that goes. Those conversations, they make you smile because they
do. They do. The hard part is that, and I can tell you, I've got guys that played professionally and come back and still talk about the buzz. You're right. It's those little micro things. And sometimes you don't know about them.
There is a lot of that, and that's a little scary sometimes too. But there is, you can't be everywhere all the time. And
you
that's,
can.
That's
it's like what happened? What did you? What did you get? What? It's
yeah.
Like,
so
you know, and, 15, I figure the statute of limitations is over at that point. Like they won't get fired. I mean, it's not even that bad, but it's like
you know. But there's definitely some things like wait a minute, yeah. What?
You did what? Like
what? You guys. Maybe I don't want to hear anymore. But you know, Ben Peeler this is the kid I was talking about, and gosh, you know, you watch the reaction on social media, and he was just a great dad and a brother and a friend to people, and you see that reaction. It's like, you know what? Ben was an average basketball player, but he had a big impact on people's lives, and that's a big thing for me. You know, just reminding these young coaches that my mindset wasn't there when I was a young kid. I don't know how yours was, but I was pretty hardcore on kids. I was 20 when I was a head coach. I was 26. And I think one of the things I talk about, I wish I would go back. If I could go back, I would value relationships more in the beginning. But I think I tried to be harder on kids because we were
so close. You got to remember though, the generation we grew up, it was the Bobby Knight world. It was a different world.
And I think I still have a little bit of that in me, but I've just evolved and understand that you know, these relationships are we're given a gift here. We're able to get into these kids' lives. And I went to a wedding last weekend of a player, you know, just seeing the growth in him and you know, it's just cool to be a part of those things and be included in those things. So, you know, again, that's a big part of the experience, but then we go into culture building, you know, how to use your assistant coaches. I wrote a little bit about the kid with the bad attitude. You know, I'm a big proponent of if somebody tells me that, you know, like let's say our feeder system, we got an eighth grade kid is pretty good, but coach, you don't want him. He's got a bad attitude. I'm like, let's go watch this kid play. Like, I want to see, because you're telling me a 13-year-old has a bad attitude. Well, has anybody ever taught him? Like, here's what I know. He probably cares a lot. If he's upset on the court and it's visible, he probably cares a lot. And you and I can't put that in a kid. But we can take that in a 13-year-old and teach him how to use it to make not only himself, but his team better.
I had a professional basketball player, Mr. Basketball, which is the best player in our state. In that, yep. And I had a parent tell me, bad attitude. Watch out for the parent. But are you kidding me? I love this kid. He's a great kid. But he had some growing up to do, and he'd be the first one to admit it now. Sure.
I do too, and I'm 47. So yeah. we've all got growth, and I think that's one of the things that it's another thing I talk about, like just the social media's impact on the recruiting process, the scouting process, and how now we put these kids on a pedestal because of their abilities, and their abilities are super impressive, but we forget that sometimes, you know, they're 13, 14, 15 years old in this early scouting process. And now you see people on social media criticizing these kids, and it's like, right. they're kids, like let them grow up a little bit. You know, they definitely got the spotlight shining on them in a different way. The recruiting process, scouting thing has always been what it's been, you know, college coaches, you know, there's guys who run scouting services and they send it to college coaches, but now they put it on Twitter too.
Right.
And you know, that's where it's changed.
And they get street cred because of that. And they don't really have any. It'd be like you and I setting up shop, to be honest with you.
Well, and that's the thing. Anybody can do that too. Anybody can just start a scouting service and start writing these reports. So, you know, there's, like I said, I tried to sample everything you're going to experience in a one year kind of stretch, but also throughout your career as a coach, just the highs and the lows and, you know, a lot of the off court stuff too.
Okay. So who is this book for? Like,
I honestly think it's for anybody who's ever coached. And because, you know, you and I can sit down and talk. And I think if you have the growth mindset, I think it's for anybody who's ever coached. I think, you know, you and every time I talk to you, you know, I pick something up. Like we always kind of go back and forth. I really like that. Send me that after we're done or something like that. And I think when I started going to coaches clinics, it's just different. I still go to clinics, but when I was young, I was writing down everything I saw. And I was just so engaged in the X's and O's and you know, even the philosophy. It wasn't a lot of philosophy stuff, I think, when we were younger. I think that's more like culture building stuff has kind of evolved, where we talk about culture building and toughness and all that stuff. I don't know if we ever really defined it when we were younger. It's a lot more defined now. But I go to clinics now, and it's more about hanging out with my coaches, you know, getting them what they need to learn and grow, but also, you know, finding one or two things that I can implement right now. So I think
they're gold, the PGC thing, they're golden nuggets, man.
Yeah, I get one or two golden nuggets.
Yeah, that's all I need is one or two golden nuggets.
So that may be what you take away, but then the kid who's 21 years old and coaching his first freshman team may take away a ton of stuff. And that was kind of my hope.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I think what's great, I think this is why I wanted to get you on real fast when the book came out, is because I talk to coaches all over the world on a regular basis because of Teach Hoops, and it's crazy that, first of all, there's a lot of similarities, but there's also a lot of differences, if that makes sense.
A lot of subtle differences.
Subtle differences. Like, you know, this one guy, I was talking to a coach from Tennessee the other day, and he's a relatively new coach. He's having some of the similar questions that I've answered before, but there's enough subtle differences because he's different. His team's different. His community's different. I think that's what makes, quote unquote, the journey different for everybody.
Yeah.
So I think
I didn't want to say, do it this way, do it this way, do it this way. It was really like the building your offensive philosophy was just a bunch of questions. Like, you know, if you want to play fast, are you the type of coach that goes crazy on every turnover? Because if you're going to teach kids to play fast, you're going to have more turnovers. Are you willing to live with that stuff? You know, so it's not.
There's
really
a fine line with that, because I've had some teams that could play fast, and I am still a turnover. I hate turnovers.
I am too. So it's like you. So I think I've evolved. Like I used to really struggle with that. But then you just start to realize, like, there's drawbacks of everything you're going to do, or you just have to learn to be okay with certain things. We're going to play this way. Like, we press a lot, but we give up some layups.
Yeah, and I tell them there's different types. I use the analogy of cheating because I'm a stats teacher. So the first 2 weeks of school, I will say to them, you're all cheaters. And they go, what do you mean? I go, because I teach seniors. I go, so you've gone through the entire 4 years of high school and never turned something in that wasn't 100% yours? And they go, what do you mean? I mean, 100% yours. Like, you didn't copy a homework problem. You
didn't ask for one answer. Yeah, something.
Yep, you haven't done that in 4 years. By the time I get to that, maybe it's one or two kids. I go, so we're going to talk about the spectrum of cheating. Do I really think it's cheating if you ask a friend for a homework question? No, for me, it's not. But it's not your work, so it is cheating. Now, if you come into my office and break into my filing cabinet and take the final exam and then give it to every, that's much worse than copying someone's homework. There's a spectrum. I think for you and I, there's a spectrum of type of turnovers too.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
what I try to teach them is there's a difference between this turnover when the game's tied and it's, you know, there's 33 seconds left and, you know, and you made a silly pass, then, you know, just make, you throw one long on a fast break and it bounces off the following wall or somebody, whatever, we can get back and play defense. There's different types.
Early in the game, aggressive mindset stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think being selfish, you know, maybe being too unselfish sometimes.
The stat sheet doesn't show that. The stat sheet shows a turnover. So I said, there's a difference type.
There's
of
a story with each one. There really is. And I think that's hard with trying to get kids to understand that your basketball IQ, you know, we use that term a lot. I don't know how much you use that term, but just understanding like you're the good shot, bad shot. First quarter versus fourth quarter, very different. And, you know, obviously the score dictates a lot of that and the opponent and all those things. So just.
And the thing is, if you got hoopers and they have a basketball IQ, you can win. Telling you.
100%. You know, and
you and I don't even
have to be great athletes. It can be skilled players that maybe aren't great athletes, but have a high IQ can really close a gap on somebody that's a more talented athlete. So again, we're getting back into things that really make our game so great. I think.
I know it does.
Especially at the high school level.
The high school level is the purest this game is, in my opinion. It's one of the reasons I don't want the shot clock, but that's a different podcast. what do you think is the one thing that you would look for from this book? Like if you're reading it or something like that. First of all, is it an Audible?
I'm working on that. Not yet. It hasn't been released on that. That's kind of strange recording your own book, by the way. And I've got two former players who are now college head coaches.
Okay.
And they both wrote the foreword for me. They each wrote a short foreword for me. Okay. And try reading that when somebody writes something about you and then reading it, recording it. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm a few chapters into it. And that was kind of the next step in the process.
I'm going to push you on that because I'm going to tell you most of my books that I read, and I'm in a library full of books.
I see.
Is Audible. And I'm not pushing Audible, but I'm pushing the audio book. The reason is I can go out and mow my lawn and I can listen to your book.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that definitely was a thought process and just kind of learning to get through the rest.
It's an interesting process as far as trying to get it like edited. And that's probably even harder in some respects.
You know, the hard part, you being somebody that records podcasts and things and trying to record the audible version of it is the dog barks once in a while the doorbell rings once in a while. And you're 10 minutes into a file and it's like, all right, delete. Let's start over again.
Let's start over. See, the podcast, I don't have to start over. An Audible book.
Well, yeah, you can edit it a little more. It's harder to edit the, when you're reading chapter by chapter. And some chapters are short and sweet. Some are a little longer.
And how do you break it up by chapters? Is that what you have to do?
Yeah, each file has to be a certain size. So they can't take a file that's bigger than a certain size. So you have to, they gave me some pretty good parameters. The other hard part is you've got to stay from a decibel level. You got to stay in a certain range almost the whole time. And it's like, it took a while to get going is what it took. Cause you had to try to set up the kind of the perfect parameters before you really started. So that introduction the first time took a while just because you're looking at, I was able to, you know, you can use things like Audacity and stuff. And I was able to sit there and kind of watch and see the, you know, what decibel level you're at, just kind of makes them.
I would think late night or early morning is probably your best, huh?
Yeah, I think early morning is probably the best. Or, you know, my family's pretty good. Like, we got to go shopping anyways. We'll leave for a little while and give you some time to do it. And then, we finally hit end of summer. So end of summer for us is softball nationals. I coach girls softball too for my daughter's team. Then we hit Florida for a week. And then we came back for about a week. And my wife and I went to New York City just recently for our 20th anniversary. So I got to get back to it. Long story short, I've been slacking.
All right, I'm going to push you on that. All right, so last question, which is what I was leading to. One takeaway from this, one big takeaway from the book, the process, the writing, and that kind of stuff. I will put this down in the show notes. So anybody that's listening to this or watching this or doing whatever, I will put a link down below so you can find Coach. I'll even put Coach's contact stuff, so if you want to get a hold of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will do that for sure, too.
Yep. Yeah, I love hearing from coaches and trying to help just as you do. My biggest takeaway is this. As much as we love winning, and anybody that knows me, and a lot of your listeners may not know me, I'm as competitive as they get. Like
I'd put my family. We can't play board games in my family.
I believe it. That doesn't surprise me at all. As much as I love winning, I'm at that point. I'm 47 years old. I've been doing this for 25 years. I started when I was really young, obviously. Even had a couple years off in there. Every year I value my relationships with my players more. Every year I value seeing them raise their kids, to seeing them be leaders in our community. And I realize, I've had some great moments from a win standpoint, in my life and my career. I've been very fortunate to coach some really great players, but I'm realizing more and more that's not the impact. That's not the legacy. The legacy is just the opportunity to lead every day, to model how to be a great dad, how to be a great husband, how to be a great teacher, or whatever it is you choose to be in life. And that's where the greater impact is. And we sometimes put way too much on a win or a loss. And there's so much more in there. And one of the things that I talk about in this, and for me, I've always said we're going to evaluate the performance, not the result. I think society has told us that results are important.
And that's what we're judged on, which is crazy.
Right. But it's got to be a byproduct of just doing things the right way day in and day out. It's just, we're not showing up to win a game. We're showing up to win this trip down the floor, whether that be getting a stop, a rebound, or getting a bucket, or getting to the free throw line, or just breaking it down into, micro, just smaller pieces and tackling life that way. I think life can be overwhelming when you look at the big picture. I think you need to be able to step back and see the big picture, but then you need to be able to zoom in and understand how you get from point A to point B. And I think that's more or less the main goal in this book, is just seeing that big picture, but then being able to make it so it's not overwhelming. How do we chip away today? What do we take away today? And then just so many of the nuggets that I've borrowed over the years. You may see one or two of yours in there, because you and I have talked a lot especially since the pandemic has started. And, so many other great coaches that I've had the opportunity to be influenced by. And I think that's what it is. Like, basketball, we had this conversation where you're describing something. I'm like, I'm not really sure what that is. You tell me what it's called, and I'm not really sure what it is. You describe it. I'm like, oh, yeah, we call it this. It's almost like a different dialect of the same language, right?
Oh, it is. It's crazy how that works. And then I think, the one takeaway for me from being in this journey is I just remember some of those early losses. You would have thought I ran a dog over with the car kind of thing. Like,
yeah, you shut everybody out. And I do talk about, that's another thing that like Friday nights, I don't watch film on game night anymore. I don't know where you're at on that. I don't watch it at all on game night anymore.
I sleep really well Thursday night if we play on Friday, because I can't do anything anymore.
Yeah, but back in the day you didn't, right?
No, back in the day it was like, I'm going to find this one thing it's not going to really, no, it's not.
And again, that's what I'm trying to get some younger coaches to realize. Like, there's only so much you control. Friday nights now, I keep saying Friday. We play Wednesdays and Friday, but game night, I take my assistant coaches and my family, and we go out afterwards. We eat pizza, we order a couple drinks or whatever it is. But we can't fix anything that night.
Find a good place that the parents aren't hanging out at. That's my advice to young coaches. Do not hang out where the parents are normally.
On game night, especially. Yeah. I'm still friends with some great parents over the years, but there's just too much emotion tied to that 24 hours after a game, your emotion may not be their emotion, and that's when it's really frustrating, is when you're on a high after a win, but then there's a kid or a parent who's on the low because. Maybe selfish. I don't know if selfish reasons are right. They're just
It's not. You can't, like, my advice to the young coaches is you can't be rational with an irrational person. And parents are not rational. I'm not rational. I love my kids. I'm not rational about them. It's like, right. So it's like,
Once someone told me that little tidbit, it's like, when parents are getting mad at me, it's like, they love their kids. It's like mama bear. They're going to attack you rather than let anything happen to the Cubs. It's
right. Like, and now with AAU and travel stuff, not only are they that mindset, but they're also entitled because they've spent so much money. Like, I don't think you understand how much money we've spent. Well, it's still, I can't make my decisions from a coaching standpoint based on how much money you've spent on your kid growing up. Like, I've got to still look at this objectively and, you know, make those decisions. So
I know. All right, Coach, thank you so much for being on. And I will put on down below the journey, lessons from the hardwood. I will put the link down below and all of Coach's contact information. Thanks, Coach.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And don't forget to check out the website, www.coachwinners.com. You can order it directly from there. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I know you're going to hit all that in the show notes. So, Steve, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. And fingers crossed. And things
that was good. Well. You got that in. You got that in right away at the end. I'm going to give you an A on that. Most people don't get that.
I'm learning.
You're learning. Hey, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you subscribe, like, jump up and down, review, do whatever you got to do. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Have a great
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.